A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll have you know, I've got a very flat tongue, but it's talent.
I think that's a bit I'm going to use for the little bit at the start of the...
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
You are now inside the world's only live-action video game. Activating graphics! Ooh! Now, a question, if any of you were born ever, make a noise for me now! Yes!
Yes!
How I love an English audience. You people have been trained since Panto to respond to any old dumb shit.
Robotron, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm bloody excellent, mate. I'm a box of fluffy ducks. How are you?
Well, yeah, all good this end. So we talked about this when we started recording. We are putting this together the morning after football didn't come home. it's a rough time for the country right now. But explain to me how you kept up to speed with the football.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how I kept up to speed with the football. Having had my second dose of Pfizer vaccine, I went down into town, saw a friend's one-woman production of Swan Lake at 4 PM, which is a good thing to do on footy day, walked outside through the England fans and thought to myself, you know, if I get stabbed, I've just done everything you can do in London in one day. Got back to my house, Pfizer jab took over, but wasn't watching the game, right? What I did was put on WrestleMania X7 and I'm listening to the sounds of the crowd cheer, like the neighbors cheering the footy. And it felt like we were all watching the wrestling from 20 years ago. And I've never felt more included yet alone in one moment. And then eventually I conked out and at one point just went, oh, woke up, went, I wonder how the game is, and just put my head towards the window and just heard, yeah, oh, and I knew.
You knew it was a rough night at the office. But I like the idea of everybody watching WrestleMania X7 with you. That's a really lovely thing.
Nice.
Was the cheer from next door simultaneous with the Austin heel turn that confused everybody?
Yeah, they yelled out, dubious creative choice.
That's what they did during the penalties, strangely.
And yeah, that's it. They're all just, shake his hand, shake his hand.
We are here to talk about three wrestling matches that Rob would take whilst stranded on a desert island. Now, is WrestleMania X7 a hint as to your first one?
Well, it can be. It can be if you want it to be. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to figure this out. That was the thing. Right. And bearing in mind, I'm Australian. I'm from a desert
island. Are you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've already been stranded with very little wrestling. I was a wrestling fan growing up in the 90s. You know, you had what they had at the video store. It was great. And I was too young for the ECW ones when they were on the white VHSs and they just looked awful.
Oh.
It was great. Anyway, I'm going to go with, I spoke to my wife before this and we agreed that I wasn't going to put on the crap Survivor Series match that we watched when we first started dating, which was also when I realized I was bisexual, because the match was boring, but I got very excited by what was happening. So we just started to fuck. So
nice.
Yeah, that was it. I just went, bad wrestling. We'll have some of our own. So We're not gonna pop that one on there. I can't even remember.
But out of interest, before we drift away from that, can you remember the exact, what was the Survivor Series match? Are you gonna say?
No, it's mid-90s. It's mid-90s. Right. It's somewhere. I think it's got to be in the New Generation. And it was pretty grim, as I recall. I think Owen Hart was definitely bumping around for somebody. And eventually oh no, I know exactly what it is. It's the one with Leslie Nielsen looking for the Undertaker.
Right, that would have been, SummerSlam maybe.
That's a SummerSlam.
Could have been a SummerSlam.
Well, a SummerSlam so good I thought it was a Survivor Series. There you go.
What was the exact moment where you went, let's just not boots instead? Can you remember the exact moment?
Well, probably the moment where, you know, I wanted to do that anyway, and this was actually getting in the road of what was going on. We'd rented a video, so we had something else to do. So,
it was
anyway.
The old favourite, SummerSlam 94 and chill, as the kids call it.
Mate, this was pre-chill. This was an Australian summer. There's no chill in the summer, and there's no culture either. We were the two most urbane people in that neighbourhood.
All right, so we're not having anything from there, but what is your first match going to be?
First match is going to be, I may as well go with what is my favourite and the match that I show everyone when they go, but what is it, John? What is this pro wrestling you love so much? And I go straight to Hell in a Cell. Do I mean the first one, the technically proficient match with Shawn and Undertaker? Do I? Fuck. No. Of course I mean Mankind versus The Undertaker.
Oh, man! The God Almighty! They killed him!
Oh, my God.
As God is my witness, he is broken in half!
It never got better. I mean, the Triple H versus Foley one is marvellous, but it's just a riff on this match.
It really is. Yeah. Where was John then when you watched this for the first time?
All right. So this is 1998. That comes out, which hits. I was 13. I was at school. Never saw the pay-per-view. Hadn't seen it when it first came out, but we used to get WWF Superstars at 11 o'clock at night on the TV, which was just the perfect Attitude Era show, because it was 45 minutes of montages promising a match would happen, right? Various people uttering incredible racist and sexist threats to each other. And then right at the end, some smashed together highlights of a match that made wrestling look really good, you know? And it, which given that I had memories of wrestling as being the colourful thing I watched in rural Australia when I was 5, and then the colourful thing I watched in suburban Australia when I was 7. Like, I'm one of those, let's just put it this way. There's a surprisingly large number of wrestling fans from Australia whose first memories will involve the phrase, Johnny B. Bad.
Oh, okay.
WCW, shown at lunchtime on a Sunday.
So that's where the audience was then, wasn't it? That was WCW had a captive audience in Australia.
Oh, of course. Well, of course we're a captive audience. You know, it's fine. It's a combination of convicts and people that the military killed. But yeah.
So what was the with the Hell in a Cell match? What's a moment from that you still find yourself remembering? Obviously, there are iconic moments, but is there one in particular?
Look, I mean, good God Almighty. Good God Almighty. I mean, just to say those three words in a row, you immediately can see Mick's beautiful fall. You can see the hand cresting the top of the cell as he goes over and beautifully done, and the thing exploding. And you know what? I dined out describing it to friends who couldn't just access it. You know, like, you're just trying to explain what pro wrestling is, and you're like, then the satanic zombie cult leader, through the conception of all of humanity's pain, off a cage through a table, and then a bloke called Terry lost his shoes. I always remember the fall. I liked that. I liked, he's smiling. By God, he's smiling. You know, with the tooth through the nose. So beautiful. But to be honest, my favorite thing, and we're going to end up returning to this a bunch of times, is when out comes the thumbtacks, right? Mm. Out comes the thumbtacks. For someone who is allegedly unconscious on his feet, right? Absolutely broken, battered beyond repair, whose spine looked like a crocodile's spine, according to his chiropractor, at the best of times, Mick Foley remains enough of a showman to empty the whole bag out, giving it a bit of a flick, making certain we can all see. That's what I admire about that.
The true ability to continue to be the showman despite falling twice, almost to your death.
Well, Mick's the only wrestler I can think of who is both a showman but also involved in an actual fight. Like, you will suspend your disbelief with him, not in the sense of going, oh, wow, look at this tussle, because actual fighting is confusing and boring to look at. Like, I watched a street fight happen one time, and there were no fucking Hadoukens getting thrown that day. That was just two blokes, and I just was like, look at those guys warming up to do something. That's what it looked like. You mostly just heard the sound of their fists whooshing past each other, and then you realised, oh, wait a minute.
This is the fight. This is the main attraction.
Well, that's it. It feels like when you watch a documentary and they say, these are two spiders fighting, and you're like, well, I'm glad you told me that's what that was, because otherwise it's beautiful, just sort of whizzing around.
It's quite poetic.
Yeah, but let's just put it this way. I remember sitting with my wife on the couch. We've watched a lot of wrestling together. Mm. When we watched the match with Triple H on the Cell, right, and Mix got the barbed wire 2x4, right, and he set it on fire, and he holds it above his hands, right, and I just remember screaming, hit him, hit him, just over and over, hit him with the bat, hit him, right. And my wife just went, what a showman. Because it was perfect. And the genius of, you can see I've got it. I'm going to hit him. You want me to hit him. Now I've held it long enough, you don't know if I'm going to be able to. I'm going to try. I didn't! And this is what makes him a genius. Because Mankind is such a ridiculous character. But, I mean, back to Hell in a Cell. His suffering, his agony, it's not even determination. He just seems to want to keep going. Seems a little cheerful to be there. Oh.
He was I don't think it was meant to catapult him into sort of the stardom that it did. It was meant to be just, because the story goes that sort of it was meant to be that first fall off the Cell and then a match would carry on. But then the second fall wasn't meant to happen, allegedly. Yeah, and then that would be, I think, something being contested for a while, yes, whether or not it was or not. But hey, regardless of whether it was or not, it was a phenomenal fall, the second one.
Oh, look, well, his updated story is that it was meant to kind of curl in a bit and he was meant to kind of get stuck like Winnie the Pooh trying to get into Rabbit's hole. Mm. Right, and then he would slowly fall, and that's fine, but that sounds so much like the the WCW version of a spot.
Yeah, it doesn't sound as interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like we're gonna get an over 40 macho man Randy Savage to climb to the top of a high cage. He's gonna jump off it. Oh, cool, elbow drop, no. Oh, splash, no. Double axe handle, that seems stupid.
The old top rope nothing that never lands.
But have you seen it? Because he doesn't. It's amazing. And it's that moment going, I heard your ankles crack. I heard him go, sir.
I love a good top rope nothing like that with a double axe handle. It's my favourite. It's my favourite. When did you become a wrestling fan, John?
Look, the first time I encountered wrestling, it would have been Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling on the telly, Saturday morning cartoons, which, of course, doesn't contain any wrestling. It's just about some people who wrestle, right? And then it cuts to Captain Lou Albano doing things like, I'm lifting weights, and look at this! On this end, it's a pizza! And on this end, it's a pizza! And I didn't realise that my eyesight was poor until it took me 30 years to realise that that was the same bloke who was Super Mario in the live
act.
Despite the fact Captain Lou looks like Captain Lou and can't act. Behaves the same way both times.
It's funny how you say it was a wrestling show, didn't contain much wrestling. Didn't even contain much Hulk Hogan, because that wasn't even Hulk doing the voice, I found out
Brad
down the
Garrett.
Road. Yeah, like, I mean, excellent work, Brad. And it connects Everybody Loves Raymond to the WWE multiverse quite nicely. But I was like, not even Hogan could be asked to do it.
Well, of course he couldn't. Animation's not the big town.
It's very true.
And yet at the same time, I mean, if Hulk Hogan had found a way that he didn't have to wrestle, but that Korean animators could do it for him, you'd think he would have been into it.
You'd have thought so.
Not too many leg drops, brother.
So was this your introduction to wrestling through that cartoon? So what did you make of it then? Was it something that you did you know that it was going to be something you'd fall into as a fan, as a sport? Was it just you liked the cartoon?
Well, what was weird is I saw this and it was just like all the other shows at the time where a bunch of fun people went and did nice things and they had cars and there were people who were evil. And that was just good. I think that served as like it solidified you knew the names of these people. And then you'd see like dribs and drabs of it and you would go, oh, that's Roddy Piper. Oh, I don't like Roddy Piper. Ooh, right. But then the thing that I don't know how this happened, but one day my dad just sort of went, ah, Jake the Snake. And this kind of weird knowing way. And I still don't know, because I mean, my dad's been dead a long time, so I don't know where he encountered Jake the Snake, but it was this tone of voice that suggested, many times my paths have crossed with this terrible man. Once again.
Looking wistfully out of the window like, yeah, that's it. Jake the Snake.
Ah, my old nemesis, Jake the Snake Roberts. But yeah, we had that, and then we must have had some highlights from the WWF, because I knew what Hulk Hogan looked like when he moved, because I knew enough of that so that when I was 7 and I saw live action WCW, I remember when Sting came out thinking, oh, this is their Hulk Hogan.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, but the first time I saw proper matches all the way through, it would have been like WCW Saturday afternoon, super colourful programming, you know, Mark Mero impersonating Little Richard. Great.
Because that's the second time now his name has come up. So yeah, did you sort of adopt him as one of your favourites early on?
Well, he had my name.
That's true. I mean, that's true.
And my dad used to sing Johnny Be Good. So I was there like, oh, Johnny Be Bad. Wow.
See what you did there.
To be fair, even for a 7-year-old is astonishingly dorky. I see why the other kids used to beat me. but this is my abiding memory of that was the first time I found this, because I was excited because I was like, oh, wrestling. Like, this, oh, I've been looking for it again. Wrestling is on. I didn't know what a 1-4 match meant, right? And so they were just saying, well, Sting tussled with Vader and Vader defeated Sting in a 1-4 match. And then they're just showing bits of it. And that meant I was terrified of Vader. I love Vader still, but I was very frightened of this big man, right? Who, to be fair, just essentially just looked like any of my, you know, any of my neighbors' divorced dads in a badly put together Halloween costume. You know, I cut some holes in your bloody nana's undies and I'm wearing them. Oh, I'll show you something. Right. But because I didn't know what a 1-4 meant, right, I thought the match ended when somebody fell over. So, of course.
Oh, 1-4. Yeah.
So Vader bloody thumped Sting and Sting just fell. And I just wept like, oh, God. It's done.
And then when the match carried on, was there confusion from your side?
Because they were just showing highlights, you know.
A whole 3 minutes wait and see. Did he die? did he die?
Yeah.
Did you, when you were in Australia, did you get a chance to see anything live wrestling?
Oh, yeah, I did. I did. That came along later. because I'm from Perth, and Perth's got a few wrestling federations. I got to wrestle for one of them too, which was nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for New Horizon Pro Wrestling, run by Mana. I got to wrestle Heritor, who was their hi-fi champ. And he was, what a giving human being was Heritor, because they trained me for about 3 weeks. And, you know, I did it in army boots instead of wrestling boots, so I couldn't run anyway, and then that slowed me down, and I wore jeans instead of tights, so that slowed me down. And let's just put it this way, a comedy match that should have gone for 5 probably goes for 20 just because I can't move. That was great. But, yeah, him and the Maltese sensation, Mattel Pache, who was my bodyguard, who just did all the moves in the match. It's fabulous. Yeah. Also, the fact that we sliced Heritor's head open twice during the lead up to the match and concussed him several times. Concussed him at a comedy club. That was pretty good. Good times.
How did you get into to the wrestling training then? So what was the story there?
Well with that, right? With that, and it's quite cute. Herator had just done a promo and put it on Facebook, and it was an open challenge to anyone. And of course, it was probably meant to be a storyline, but I just was very bored that week and went, well, if it's an open challenge to anyone, local comedian John Robertson will fight you. And so I just put together a thing where, because Herator was bald and had a beard, so I just cut off a little bit of my hair, stuck it to the, like, just a tomato and drew a frowny face on it. And just went, I'll show you something, and then just headbutted it till it exploded. I just cut a lot of these promos, calling myself the softcore icon, John Robertson. And yeah, and off the back of that, I mean, I really sold 6 extra tickets to that show.
A whole 6 extra tickets, that's it.
I knew by face all the people that had come to see me. It was great.
But that, so that all was that, was, did you expect there to come a booking from that, or was that you just, I'm just bored, I'll just make
I'm
a
just
video
bored. But just, then they were so nice, and the thing was as well, I mean, they worked me, I mean, they worked me hard, because I genuinely thought I'd be walking out of there with the title. I there was the slightest feel, I was like, they're gonna let me go over.
What was the vibe from? Because obviously, you know, you say nothing but lovely things about Herator, and they looked after you there. But obviously, when somebody from outside comes in and is suddenly like everyone's talking about them, well, like there must have been a little bit of disrespect.
No,
from them or no?
No, the wrestlers could not have been nicer. There was a bloke called the Giant Coyote, who's still one of the largest men I've ever seen, who, when I climbed up a ladder, just walked over to me and gently with one hand put me on his shoulder and carried me around like a monkey. That was cool. Everyone was super nice. The only person who wasn't necessarily nice, and even he wasn't nice about it, was an actual outsider they'd brought in, and not outsider with a capital O. So, and then Scott Hall had a really strong opinion about me. No, but Low Key was in as a guest wrestler. And my match was meant to finish because we had videos of Herator's face getting sliced open with his own championship belt. We'd had to drive him home to his wife, having concussed him, all of this. So it had gotten a bit intense, our little feud. So I was meant to go through a table, and Low Key came in and sort of just went, "Who's this? Who's this comedian? No table, right?" And I rang up my wife and just went, "This guy Low Key says I can't go through a table." And she went, "Baby, it's your show. You want to go through a table, you go through a table." So never forget that my wife's on a slight mission to cripple me every once in a while. But yeah, in the end, I didn't go through a table. And at no point during my match, I think, was Low Key even remotely pleased.
He comes across as a very serious competitor, does Low Key?
Yes, absolutely. He comes across as someone who hasn't, in fact, been informed that wrestling's enjoyable and also an art form. People actually don't sit there, come there to watch. Also, for someone whose name is a pun, very weak on jokes. Very weak. You know, a pun and a Street Fighter reference is Low Key the World Warrior. All right, you dork. You like dad jokes? You like video games? You think we'd get on? No? All right.
Very serious man. Very serious man.
Oh, my God. I hope we don't have heat. Oh, no. Hope I haven't just shot on him.
I want you to shoot on Scott Hall now. What's the story between you and Scott Hall, for those who don't know?
I've never met Scott Hall for any reason. Jesus Christ. No, I'm blocked by Kevin Nash, but that makes sense.
What did you do to upset Kevin Nash?
Look, me and the comedian Brendan Burns had a podcast for a while where we just, you know, we just watch old wrestling pay-per-views, and we'd rip the piss out of them. And, John Hastings, lots of other people got involved in this. And we were doing a live show one day. And at the start of it, because we're going to watch an old pay-per-view, maybe Brendan or me, let's not say who said this, suggested, I mean, I know exactly who it was, but for the purpose of obscurity and legal action, let's remain silent. Brendan said, "Hey, you know, to kick it off, why don't we play Dead Cunt Bingo and just try to figure out how many of these people have died?" And it was a Survivor Series, so of course everyone's teams come up, so the bets were filled out pretty quickly, and it was most of the card had died prematurely. And very shortly after that, two things happened. One was the WWE sent a cease and desist. It was a very nice cease and desist. It included the phrase, look, unofficially, we're all fans, but could you stop it? Which is very good.
Because and, you were streaming their shows, presumably.
No, well, no, we were just streaming our audio response to their shows, but they just right. went, if you'd be so good, kindly, please, please. It was the exact moment when you were sort of laughing at our dead friends was the moment that we stopped liking you, which makes sense when you think about it. And the other thing was that that exact week, Brendan had gotten blocked by Kevin Nash, so I just started saying, g'day, Kev, why have you blocked my mate Brendan, Kev? And I must have done that for all of about 15 times in a row over the course of about half an hour until I was blocked. And, well, there we go. He joins the list of wrestlers who have found me irritating. Hulk Hogan, I did not even tweet at you, you racist scumbag. I did not even tweet at you. I just said Hulk Hogan must be looking at PewDiePie thinking, you lucky fucker. Someone Googles themselves.
I get the vibe that he does.
Yeah, oh, fuck yeah. Absolutely.
If anybody works themselves into a shoot, it's probably Hulk Hogan, to be fair.
Well, I mean, the only thing that shot was his semen into his best friend's wife, but that was
consensual. Was... It your second match. What was you like your second match? It's, you know what, it's so weird because, like, I for me, like, Hulk Hogan was my hero growing up, and he's become such a punchline, and rightly so, rightly so. There is a little part of you that your heart breaks because you're like, why couldn't you have stayed good? Like, why did you have to be an arsehole? Because, like, you were the one, like, because now whenever, like, you know, people always say, oh, when are you doing this show? When are you doing your own show? And because one of the matches I would choose would be Hogan Warrior, because it was a match that, like, I first remember really getting into wrestling. And it's tainted to an extent because Hogan's in it. And it's like, well, it's so sad because...
Hang on. Let's not pretend that's not too steroidal racist fighting.
Don't know what you mean. Il Hebner was the ref. That's what you mean.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, that's what I mean. And look, the fact that Ultimate Warrior died doesn't in any way erase what he spent the last 20 years of his life doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Jesus Christ. The sort of ubermensch quality of the name Ultimate Warrior couldn't have been more clear with the stuff he was talking about. Yeah, but my second one... Right. Again, it involves, I mean, in the list of nicest wrestlers, there are two wrestlers who are, in my experience, have been supremely lovely, and they are Colt Cabana and, again, Mick Foley. And my second favorite, because I realized I'd only ever seen the highlight, never actually watched it all the way through, and I have now, and it's everything I love in wrestling. It's a perfect combination of technique, showmanship, extreme violence. And then there's just a little crest of just slight shitness to it, right? Just there is some slight moments where you go, hey, what do you know? Not exactly perfect. And that makes it alive, right? Is Edge versus Mick at, I think that's WrestleMania 22.
That's the one.
That's the one. The one with Lita. So good.
Again, lends itself to a Mick Foley match, but why this one then? Because you say it's a bit on the good, on the shit scale. It sort of balances.
Okay, this is what makes it truly great. Like truly great is that, despite everything I've just said, at the end of the match, you've got two people who have been three people because Lita's bleeding from the mouth, right? You've got three people who've just had the living shit knocked out of them, right? But what you've got is Edge, who is overselling that he's in shock, because I've been in shock, lots of people have, and you don't right? Mm. Edge looks like he's trying to do an impression of Charles Wright the first week he learned how to do the voodoo rituals as Papa Shango. You know what I mean? There's a lot of shaking and a lot of eye rolling going on, and it's not necessary. It's looking a little bit silly. We're all a bit confused, right? Whereas Mick, because he is tired and he's just a believable performer, you get this is a vanquished bloke who's just been through hell, right? Edge is trying to make it look like he's seen hell and he's just sort of scraped through. The storyline's done that for him. He's just doing that, and it's perfect because it's just a little bit too much. And it takes you back to the fact that wrestling can be a bit silly, despite the fact his actual blood is coursing out of his head at great speed. But I just love things like, again, here are the thumbtacks, but in this match, Foley points to them. But he points to them in a way that just suggests, just quietly, friends, I am still fighting, but could you look at that? How good is it that I've got that? Which is marvelous, right? And then it's just the little pause before the table. The little pause where Mick has enough time to look back a second time. The thing is on fire, and then we go. And that's what I like. It's that 4 or 5 seconds where like, this took a little longer than you expected, but that kind of makes it better.
It's the build. The tension just ramps up just a touch more before.
Just a touch more, but then also, you know, you could just see in their little things are like, okay, that's longer than even they expected. And then the thing that they're doing, it's not taken away from at all. And that's like, think about that with wrestling. That's so rare. Like, anytime you hear the words, you know, exploding barbed wire death match, you know, and the wrestlers, because we've just seen it again, mm-hmm. you know, there they are, middle of the ring, Jesus Christ, and it's never what you expect. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is great. You see it, you go, that table's on fire. I reckon someone's going to go through that. Jesus Christ, the spear, of course it is. And it's brilliant.
It doesn't exist too long.
Yep.
Before, so like you're not left hanging with it, as we said a second ago, like it's there just long enough to drink it in, and then it's done.
Also, the fact that Mick and Edge extinguished the fire with their bodies so fast, it's all a thrill. Like, because, I mean, I've seen Foley go through bunches of tables, and there's something about this match that makes what's happening, it's not upsetting. Like, you don't feel bad. They've told the story so well. It's been performed so well. You don't feel bad that Mick lost. Mick got what he wanted. That's what it feels like. And that they've told that story brilliantly. Whereas, like that hell of a match in 2006, where you've got, what is it, Tommy Dreamer, Bueller, and I can't remember who else is with Tommy. At One Night Stand.
Terry Funk.
Terry Funk. Right. And then you've got Mick and Edge and Lita. And that match, while there's that one glorious moment of Funk coming back with his eye bandaged, and you're like, oh, Jesus, the unbeatable, old, terrifying cowboy man is back. God, star of 1976's Paradise Alley with Sylvester Stallone. Terry Funk has returned. There is also the raw horror of when they're lying in the barbed wire, Terry Funk quite clearly being too old for this, and his jaw quivering the way that, you know, my grandfather's quivered one time when he experienced human emotion for the first time in his life at age 70, you know? I don't know whether it's just the age thing or whatever, but rather than it just being like violent chaos, it's perfectly done extreme violence that tells a story.
You see the fragility.
Yeah. Well, this is what I'm saying between the two, right? The match that I like is the one that goes, this is what we're going to do. Here we are doing it. And then there's the other match. We go, well, there's a lot going on here. You know, there's a lot going on. But the thing that's real is the fact that Terry Funk is quite old and is in extreme pain. And that's actually making me sad.
Yeah. You know, Terry's always been a master of, whilst just being over the top mental old Texas man. Like, he also has this ability just to tap into you emotionally. Mm. He's always been very good at that. Like, yeah. I don't know whether I think part of it might be just that frail old voice. Like, the kind of talks like your granddad talking to you, like you say. But then, like, just going through hell with somebody shortly afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, my granddad's always turning to me and going, whose chainsaw is that? It's your chainsaw. Oh. Well, the point I was trying to make there, though, is For me, Terry's fragility in that, even if it is a performance, kind of ruins that match for me. I'm taken away from it. I don't feel like I've had an enjoyable time. I feel sad. I feel like some people have gone and sacrificed themselves for what is, in the end, a really obnoxious, stupid fan base, you know, or at least can be, because I know I am, you know, all the time, right? Whereas in the first match, I go, these two people have been hurt. The fact that Edge isn't a great actor suggests to me they're going to be okay, but it doesn't break it as much as, okay, you remember when Shane McMahon went off the cell,
yes,
right? And you realized as the table slowly disassembled itself, a sort of self-flat-packing IKEA configuration. And then at the end, he put his thumb up to let everyone know he was okay. I don't want that. I want to have the slight sense that you've been fucked up. Mm-hmm. I don't want the total evidence that you have been. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a fine line in it. I seem to remember from that Shane fall as well, the line that Michael Cole came out with on commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, for the love of mankind. Mm. Like, okay, strong line. I like it. What's lost is, and unfortunately, this is the world we live in, John, where like everybody films everything. What's lost is, as you see Shane hit the table, Michael Cole hasn't looked up from his piece of paper to which he is reading for the love of mankind. Yeah. Like, I hear what you're saying. You want that little bit of like, ooh, but you don't get it.
No, I know. Well, this is what makes Jim Ross a good commentator. Mm-hmm. Is there's somebody organically reacting to things who's learned how to speak in little sound bites. I wish I knew how to do that. Bloody brilliant. Right? I gabble for days. But there's somebody, someone's fallen off the top of the cell. You can't scream obscenities, which is, I challenge almost anyone. Just go, fuck! You know, given that you're broadcasting, you can't scream obscenities, you can't just make a guttural noise of surprise. Good God Almighty is wonderfully articulate.
Mm-hmm.
You're literally calling to the only thing that's actually higher than where Mick was a minute ago. And we might need him in a second. It's great.
It's a strong call. I like that one.
I don't know. I don't think you've got this slang here in the UK, but a synonym for broken up beyond all repair in Australia is cactus. So.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Well, the thing is, so for me saying for all mankind, you may as well have just gone, he's cactus, mate. You know, you might as well have just gone, he's cactus, Jack. You know what I'm saying?
Dude,
for the love of mankind. I can just see it.
What brought you to the UK?
Money.
Good shout.
Yeah, oh, look, you got to hand it to the pound. It's quite good. I quite like it.
Was it always the plan to come over here to do comedy, or did you have other designs when you got here?
Oh, look,
I mean, obviously you were doing comedy over there, but was the plan to continue that?
Oh, yeah. Well, not really. The plan was just to go wherever I found a crowd. And you guys have a lot of tolerance for daftness and a lot of tolerance for crowd work and getting involved. And, you know, the difference is like, you know, I mean, you've just seen the football here. People walking down the street and they're all singing together, right? That might happen once in a while in Australia. It's not a bloody, you know, huge part of the culture like it is here. But then you guys have that for everything. So like when I go and I perform at my gaming conventions, people chant and they cheer and they do all of that. And yeah, you just like the UK is just really good at saying, oh, this is a fun thing. We're all going to go and have fun. It's why like if you go to see Progress Pro Wrestling, I mean, they had some heels come out who had nuclear heat with the crowd. I don't know who they were. I don't even know what they were trying to say. I just joined in and trying to kill them, you know? Now, I mean, if you put political designs on that, let's be fair, that's how the Third Reich rose. But nevertheless, right, it's still something about, you know, if you put it in the frame of entertainment, people getting together, having a really wild time, and people in the UK are just really good at doing that. You know, you've been trained since Panto. It's wonderful.
It is. Wrestling does lend itself nicely to that pantomime aesthetic, doesn't it?
Well, beautiful, straight up. And also, probably one of the most honest, like UK wrestling, one of the most honest types of entertainment, despite the nudge and a wink, you know, of its reality. Now, any of that kind of end of the pier, down the Blackpool Illuminations thing, I've got endless respect for. You know, it's from your you know, from your big daddies to your very, you know, like here's a guy jumping around, twisting himself around on World of Sport, all the way to those comics who is just like, all right, I see that you know 12 million jokes and you wrote three of them. That good on you. Good on you. You're gonna sing us a beautiful song. You're gonna do a trick with a hat, and you're just excellent. I love stuff like that.
What was obviously you're very glowing about audiences and stuff over here. What was your first experience like doing stand up over here?
Oh, first experience over here. Well, I mean, I jumped right into it because I was in Glasgow, and that was the place we were told to be afraid of. Because, you know, the idea was that Glaswegians particularly were ruthless and funnier than you. And the thing is, they could be if they chose to be, but they also lean in and have a good time. And yeah, I mean, it was a fine, like that one was all right. I was just doing a preview because the next day I was going to the Edinburgh Fringe. And then like right at the end of the show, you know, I went, are there any questions? And a man just went, what was that? Which was a perfect, you know, bang, yeah, great. One and done, boom, you know, there you go, kid, have a good time. But even he came up afterwards and went, oh, I'll pop over to the Fringe and see how you're doing. And we had a really, that started off being great. But the first time I did stand up, like in a club in the UK, it was in a bed and breakfast in Plymouth. That was just after the Fringe. I went from the Edinburgh Fringe down to London, got in the car of a bloke who has severe short-term memory loss. So that drive went a lot longer.
Oh, God.
Then it could have. I mean, he didn't notice, but Jesus, it was a thing. We got there, did this show, which was a good show. It was just a piss up, you know, people having a nice time. But it was such a quality gig that while we were in the car on the way back, the headliner who was still on stage texted me from the stage with the words, "That fucking woman has thrown up all over my shoes," which goes to show you the quality of the gig. I don't think I was ever paid.
Christ, this is the joy of the stand up circuit, and everyone's got their own stories about how it all rolls.
The next day, I went to Hammersmith and did a gig with Harry Hill.
Amazing.
But this is the schizoid nature of it. Like in Australia, you would go and you would do a rugby club, and then the day after that, you might do another rugby club. Well, the day after that, you might be doing a club in town, right? Over here, I could do a week where I'm like, science fiction convention, corporate show, might do a voiceover. Yes. Right. I've done exactly one voiceover. My voiceover agents brought me in because I can do accents. The accent they wanted me to do, Australian, as it turned out.
What was the voiceover for?
It was for Farmer Wants a Wife Australia, which is run by BBC Lifestyle, which is aired in South Africa. And the ad is pretty good. All the farmers want a wife. I mean, I slowly cringed into myself. I was like, this is how Tito Santana must have felt getting to be El Matador, you know. A little bit like it. It's obviously there's not such a virulent history of anti-Australian racism anywhere in the world. In fact, if anything, there's a long history of Australian racism. Anyway, not that long a history. There was a long history, and then we showed up. Anyway, I just do all sorts of stuff. Got my, you know, got my gaming expos that I bloody love doing, and solo shows. And let's just put it this way. Like, they let me do theatres here. It's very nice. It doesn't have to be a festival or anything. I can rock up in Oxford or something. It's like, oh, hey, here's this arts centre you're at. I'm like, oh, you beauty.
It's a beautiful variety of venues and locations to do. What has been the your favorite venue and your least favorite venue? I don't even want to say that, because even a least favorite venue would have like a certain charm to it.
I'll tell you, I know exactly the two answers brilliant. For you. The best venue is the Birmingham NEC.
That's
where Lovely. UK Games Expo and Insomnia are. And when I go out and I do my show, the dark room at Insomnia has usually got about 1500 people in it, just chanting and screaming, and no one seems to mind that I come out to Triple H's music. And, you know, we just have a really wild time of the chanting. I mean, I wear Road Warrior bloody armor when I do that show, and you're running around, and it's as close to, like, it's the part of wrestling I wanted to do, which is I do the entrance. I'm permanently stuck in the entrance. I don't actually have to wrestle. It's great. It's great. I feel the way, okay, when I do that show, I feel the way I used to feel when I'd play the original WrestleFest and you'd see the Legion of Doom, right? And the Legion of Doom in that game, when you're a kid and the arcade machine's so tall, they're huge, they're borderline unbeatable. When you see them in real life, especially in their declining years, you go, oh, okay, that's all right. That's two guys in cosplay as themselves. Okay. But you know what I mean? So, you know, because once they get to the ring, it's not as good. But the promise of them's always amazing.
It's all in the bill. It's all in the look. It's all in the aesthetic.
Yeah. Oh, what a rush. And then about 10 seconds later, you go, all right, someone's on Quaaludes. That's no good. Gee, I wish that tall bloke had stopped snoring in the ring. That's not great. Anyway,
So your best is the NEC. What about
And the worst one ever, the worst place I've ever been in the UK to do a gig was Bournemouth, Lava Ignite, the club Lava Ignite, where the MC said to me on the way, he went, don't worry about doing anything. Just say cunt 17 million times. They'll love that. And he went out and did that, and not to any great effect. It was like this army of hens and stags. And I went out and I thought, well, and this is what my training from Australia at the time had taught me, because this was my third gig in this country, right? Well, they'll be done for crowd work, and you can probably do some other things. I lost them the second I pulled out the ukulele, which was the first thing I did.
Oh.
I then had to do the set for 20 minutes. And what's amazing, I learned that night, when they start screaming off, 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 and you just sort of smile and don't go anywhere, they run out of chanting. They actually just, like, the meter runs out and they just sort of go, oh. And then if you're just very mild with them, they don't quite get moved to violence. They just sort of go, oh, he's just a boy. Oh. You know, occasionally someone will go, fuck off. And you're like, I can't yet. They'll pay me. They won't pay me if I don't. In the end, you come away going, you know what's great? It's not that I upset those people. I made them sad. Perfect. And I went over to the booker to apologize. And he was great because he just went, we don't get the same crowd here ever. Don't worry about it. They booked me again the next week. And I'll tell you what, the next week, cunt, fucking killed. Ridiculous. Always listen, friends.
The Dark Room is a show that many people will know you for, which is an amazing bloody concept of basically doing a video game on stage.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
But for those who aren't familiar with it, talk to us about sort of the conception and the initial reception and what you're doing with it and such, because it's an incredible story.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's the world's only live action video game. That's what I like to call it. You know, a little bit of a wrestling wink there. But it's me taking everything I'm good at on stage in comedy, which is I'm good at being very loud and jumping on people and improv and insult comedy, and putting that together into an interactive game show, which is meant to be a parody of the text adventures from the 80s, but has now become a parody of all gaming. Everywhere you do enough gaming festivals, you learn some stuff, you play enough stuff, you learn some things. But basically what happens is all the lights go down, I suddenly begin to talk like this, and I'm lit by a lot of lights that are just shining from me, and I'm there in my armor, and I will turn to the crowd and shout, you awake to find yourself in a dark room. And four options appear on the screen behind me. And if you're called upon to play, you pick one of the four, you try to escape, and we keep playing until you win or you die, and you will die. And because I've been going up and down the country a long time with it, when people die, the whole crowd just chants, you die, you die, you die. And then you get a crap prize, and it's like going to the wrestling. You know, it's a wrestling panto, like this sort of, and it's one of those things where, like, anytime I wonder, oh, you know, because I have a bloody great time on Twitch, you know, I'm having a wild time streaming there, and I travel all around, and anytime I think to myself, why aren't I on telly? Why, you know, like, I mean, TV's sort of dying out, but, you know, it'd be nice to be on there so my mother can point at a repeat of it when it's shown 6 months later in Australia and go, there he is, don't watch it, it'll be terrible, right? And it's that thing where you go, well, John, you are currently dressed as the heavy metal conception of obscure 1980s video games, and somehow that works as a sort of cult-like rock and roll experience for anywhere between 100 to 2,000 people. You're like, Yeah, you're right. That is hard to explain, isn't it?
But it's hitting that niche so well, and it's to the point where it became a video game in itself.
It did. Like, let me tell you something, pal. Amazing. I'm going to hit you right in the niche. Gonna get you right there.
Yeah, because I think I think the one thing that we've learned from the world shutting down last year and everybody suddenly becoming a brand while in lockdown is that, like,
that is the most perceptive thing anyone said about that.
It's true though. Like, in doing that, like, the money now is in narrowcasting as opposed to broadcasting, because, like, you've got to hit that particular audience with something, and this is why, you know, this is why the show has done so well, because it hits you right in the right place. If your niche is open to it, it's there.
Thank you. If your taste clitoris can be discovered. If the particular nerve
requires to be tickled, if it requires tickling,
yes,
then you can reach it.
And I am there. I'll have you know, I've got a very flat tongue, but it's talented.
I think that's a bit I'm going to use for the little bit at the start of the. Just out of context.
Oh, good. That got your niche, did it? Okay, I'm glad.
Straight in the niche. but to touch on the whole Twitch thing, because like the world shut down last year, everybody went online. How did you find the transition to move from doing live stuff? You were there, weren't you? Because it felt like you, because a lot of comedians and a lot of people who do stuff with audiences and stuff, there for a lot of people there was growing pains, because it's suddenly you're not in front of, you know, and it's all this weird technology, but you kind of seem just to be like, yeah, fine, off we go.
Oh, thank you. That was because I've got nice people who just saw my first three streams and went, let us help you. You know, it's like my mod team are really nice, and they were sort of like, okay, let's explain what an OBS scene is, and that really, really good, because my first stream, a mate of mine screenshotted it and put it on Twitter, and it was just like, okay, we're 5 minutes into John's first stream, all the tech is broken, and he's doing this, and I looked like a WWE wrestler watching a match, and in the sense of the monitor was next to me on camera, and I was looking at it like that. And that was it. It was just a camera being held up by my washing line, pointing at me next to a TV trying to play Sonic Mania. But yeah, I love it. I really bloody love it. I particularly like that, one, the audiences that are there. Some of those people are people you're going to see every day. And it's gorgeous. And you find out all about their lives. Like, there was a child that was in the process of being born while its parents were in the chat. Wow. And now that kid's learning to walk, and we get photos of it. That's Dante, the stream baby. We got all this stuff, right? There was a couple that got engaged live on the dark room when we did a 48-hour charity show last year. And that's what means something to me about all of this, is just, you know, you get a great community and all sorts of stuff happens. Also, the fact that online hecklers just have nothing. They're nothing on verbal ones. And the verbal ones very rarely have anything either. They're just, you know, the verbal ones are just people who are a bit drunk or a bit excited or have kind of misunderstood what you're saying but kind of want to be involved. Whereas the ones online, it's always like, oh, I'm sorry that you don't have the balls to do your own show. Or if you do have the balls to do your own show, well, none of us are going to go watch it. You're just rude to me. There's something about if you genuinely think you're doing something, but your offense can actually be taken out by a click before I even see it, then... Ah, sorry. Don't know what to tell you. You're not special. Sorry.
And you seem to handle them well then, the online, like, because there's a lot of that bullshit online.
Well, the thing is, it's endless. And I'm playing on easy mode because I'm a fucking white bloke, you know. Like, the second we put the LGBTQIA+ tag on Twitch, right? Because I got all sorts, you know. I've got one, I'm an inclusive space, and two, my sexuality is fluid. I've produced a great deal of fluid on a great deal of people, you know, and they didn't all look the same. So, right. But the second we did that, every once in a while, I was like, oh, I actually haven't had like homophobic abuse since I was about 25, right about the time my jawline came in and, you know, my voice stopped dropping. You know, that's the thing. I can present as an aggressive like, well, and I'm not going to say heterosexual. I've referred to myself in the past as a street fighting queer, and I'm happy with that. I like that, but I can hang out with truckers. You know, I can have myself a good time. Oh, what's that, my fucking ma? You know, I can do all of that. I had to learn to do that, you know. And then it was interesting to go, okay, there are going to be people there who are going to just see if they can upset you. But they're just sort of wanky non-people, just sort of sad bullies. None of them ever have anything perceptive to say. None of them ever say anything new. It's all the shit that I got thrown at me growing up, right? But it's that thing of like, you lack creativity. I'm going to tell you to fuck off, right? Which is funny because sometimes we leave them in chat long enough to watch them get upset, which is amazing. Then you ban them. So now you've got someone who's just done this with their keyboard, like, oh, sorry, good luck.
And just leave. Then you just kick them out and just leave them.
Well, that's the thing.
Deal with their own hubris.
Well, that's it. Well, yeah, you just sort of like, okay, your ambition was to go around from the position of cowardice and upset some people. All right, well, now we've upset you. What does that tell you? You know? Sorry, like, unfortunately, and it's a really old statement, get a life. Fucking hell.
It's true.
Jesus Christ. I mean, we had somebody at one point, and this is great because it moves away from homophobia, because I don't get that often, you know? Like, I don't present as female, you know, so I'm not being constantly fucking, you know, right? Well, at one point, somebody just wrote, you fucking man-child. And it was that moment where you're just like, okay, well, hang on a second. I'm just held up. I'm just going to hold up me little unicorn. Wait a minute. Hang on. Sorry, I've just got this kind of endless procession of actual... I legitimately stream from a mountain of toys. It couldn't have been more accurate and less hurtful. It's brilliant.
As if them saying that would make you go, oh, gosh. Maybe they're right.
No, you're right. Oh, like, well, I'll go back to being a lawyer then. No worries.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The good that you have done through Twitch outweighs all of this. £37,000 raised for charities.
That was the 50-hour show.
The 50-hour show is... So talk us through the 50-hour live stream, because sleep deprivation is a special creature. And when you're putting it all out there as well.
It's a raw bitch, is sleep dep. And, kids, if you're going to do a 50-hour show, don't fall over some speakers in the first 12 hours. Don't then fall up some stairs on the same leg, because having your leg be buggered, right, whilst getting increasingly tired, means that at the end of the show, someone will do a parody of you, which is, yeah, John, we tuned in before. And my girlfriend went, oh, I don't like him. He's always just, oh, he's just weird. And when we tuned in and you were just going, and that was it, because I was broken, just completely gone. I don't know at what point I started thinking my hair was another person. That was a a big moment, just a lot of twisting back and forth. And at one point I was standing up and I slowly began to lose consciousness, which meant that the fairy lights, because I was in a darkened room, you know, obviously with a torch in my face, the fairy lights that were on the stairs, I was convinced was a train for a while. We went on a long journey. It was one of those miracles where you wake up the next day. I didn't actually, but you wake up. Oh, no, yes, I did. I streamed. Yes, I did. Matthew was in the chat. I remember. Because I remember I woke up. I was like, oh, fucking Botchamania. Yay. Somebody put some Mega Drive music under this.
He's done very well putting Mega Drive music under Wrestlers Falling Over.
Has he ever?
Wow.
Oh, my God.
There's part of you that goes, why didn't I think of that?
Mate, I must have watched the best of Botchamania so many times that anytime I hear the opening of Dad's Army, Dad's Army is not what I think of.
But so was he in the 50 hour one, or was that the next day?
No, that was the next day. He'd come by. Coldaholic raided, and I was delighted. And also, like, because you've been very kind about my work. Make no mistake, everyone's always got their own mental health journey, right? Coldaholic was one of the things that helped me when I was really ill at one point. I was very sick. I was just having a very, very hard time. Those lists, and especially once the list started becoming an hour and a half long, as we went through like every, so bloody invaluable. Great content. My God, I've like, when I've been lying in bed, brain endlessly racing and just constantly tense, how bloody comforting are these amusing, well-researched, just very good, very satisfying units of entertainment about wrestling. I have almost certainly, in fact, no, I have, because I have watched, I think, every single list you people have ever made, right? And every single What Happened to That Wrestler. I'm going to stop saying probably, because I actually know I've watched more of that than I have actual wrestling in the last 5 years. Wonderful. Absolutely incredible.
Thank you. Well, we're delighted to have you out there. That means
it's a joy.
Everything.
I mean, I could do without that second close-up of him when he's playing the piano during What Happened to That Wrestler. The first time I saw that, I went, how funny. And I'm always cooking when I put one of those on, and I always turn around just in time for him to be a little too close.
It is quite the look. As you say, we've all been on a journey through that, and you're very kindly saying, like, watching the videos has been something that's helped you, and I think that there is some comfy viewing that I think people get from that, and it's wonderful to hear. What else kind of has helped you mentally keep ticking over during this very stupid time?
Well, the Twitch streaming's been endlessly helpful. I had to relearn how to do things consciously. So learning how to talk to people again was very helpful as well. You know, don't underestimate the joy of texting folks and get people on the phone. I really enjoyed that lockdown brought back long phone conversations. That was nice. I felt like I was a teenager again. It was great. Other things have included Street Fighter, great deal of Street Fighter. Charity work's very good. If you don't, yeah, do that. Do that, folks. That's actually just a great thing to do. And exercise. And therapy. Therapy is very important. Good old therapy. I know that I've reached the point now with my therapy, because I haven't had the same therapist the whole time. Initially, I needed it because I was in great danger. Now I'm not, right? But I've reached the point where I now bitch about my therapist, so it's become a comfy part of my life, and that's good. That's a lot of fun. When you reach the point of going, motherfucker, I'll tell you about repetitive behaviors, you know, or next week we'll discuss why you don't answer me when I ask, how are you? Hey, what's your fucking problem, man?
Did you make the decision to go into to get a therapist?
Yeah, or was I did, that, yeah.
That was.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I needed to make that decision before it was made for me. Yes. And everyone should do it. I mean, even though the NHS got a big old waiting list, right? Just get on the waiting list. It's sometimes as long as they say it'll be, sometimes longer, sometimes not, right? But I needed to. And the most important advice I've been given is, once you do have your therapist, if it's not working, right, and because you will feel confronted with some uncomfortable truths, or even just niggling and annoying ones, which is what's happened with me. Like at the moment, I'll come out of my therapy session going, "That son of a bitch, I can't believe you said that to me." Blah, blah, blah. And then this happened on Friday. Then I went and did a gig and exhibited every single behavior we'd spoken about. I'm like, well, it's fine. He's only paid to be perceptive. I can't. You know?
Yeah, you're back out doing gigs now. Did I see that? How does it feel now being back out after like a year and a half in?
It's great. Something I thought was going to happen has happened, which is that audiences have forgotten how not to speak during shows. But that's okay. That's all right. You just start talking to them and they remember how fun that is or how not fun, and then they shut up pretty swiftly. It's great. It's great. Everyone is very much themselves a lot. It's remarkable. Like, everyone's been shut up for 18 months.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. Everyone's being either the most authentic versions of themselves ever, or the most authentic versions of themselves as shut up in a weird room for ages, which is probably the most authentic version of me, to be fair.
Weird social experiment, isn't it? Just like, we've shut everybody in for a year and then we push them back out. Let's see what they do.
Yeah, well, as it turns out, they go to the football and act like assholes.
There is that, yes.
Yeah, also just quietly, one thing for the UK government, you can't actually spend the entire time condemning the players for taking the knee and then the day after the football go, "Why are you all being racist to them? Stop it." Like, because you fucking told them to. Settle down. Just quietly, the other thing is, if your therapy doesn't seem to be working, get another therapist. That's good advice.
That's some strong advice. Because a lot of people just assume, oh, maybe therapy's not for me then, because doesn't seem to be working. So, well, let's just, you know, it's like trying one flavor of ice cream and going, well, I just don't like ice cream then.
Yeah. It's like trying sodomy for the first time and going, well, I just don't. Oh, actually, no, that does. Yeah.
I think that's pretty the same everywhere. maybe not with ice cream. I mean,
I've had it done so badly, some ice cream up there would have been deeply helpful.
Hey, follow your arrow. You do you.
That's... Don't do it with an arrow.
Not with an arrow.
I used to be an adventurer like you, then I took an arrow up the arse. Up my Skyrim.
Right in the Skyrim.
Right in the Skyrim.
Let's
do it up me Khajiit. Well, no, because Khajiit is coin.
Stop, you violated the law. let's do your third and final match.
Sure, let's
do a thing. So Hell in a Cell, a heck in a sec between Mankind and The Undertaker was your first one. We had Foley versus Edge from WrestleMania. Yep. What's your last one going to be, John?
Okay, you know what? I'm going to do it. I was tossing and turning about this, whether it'll be it, but it is going to be, just for the feeling I got the first time I saw it, and it doesn't really stand up, but my God, Little Spike Dudley versus Mike Awesome. Oh,
ooh, nice. Match.
Like, because if by that point I had learned that a tables match meant there was a table, everything would build up to you going through the table. And then the WCW variant of it, which is the table will not break. Oh, come on. It did eventually. Jerry Sags threw the guy into the corner. I know it's a bit disappointing. Only the bit broke off at the end, but it was still a match, right? And then to just see, oh no, we're just going to double stack tables all around the ring. And this little man is just going to get the shit kicked out of him. It was, I blew my mind. Just blew my mind. Hated the storyline. Hated every aspect of it. Don't like his promo at the start. Judge Jeff Jones can get fucked. Don't care for him as a character, as a heel, anything. He's everything I dislike about ECW in one go. I've just sort of like, okay, so it's hardcore and Raven's a cult leader, and it's all being presented like it's happening and it's believable. Oh, incidentally, this bloke's a judge.
He's a judge, yeah.
Yeah, and yet at the same time, love Amish roadkill. So this isn't on him. This is my own. Like, I'm like, of course you can have an angry Amish warrior. Why would a judge be here? That doesn't make sense.
It's more likely that an Amish person would turn up to kick off as opposed to
hang out
to
with
a judge.
Danny Doring. That makes huge. Yeah, I know. Oh God.
I know, right? Who'd want to hang out with Danny Doring?
Well, that's actually a great question and one that's always baffled me. But I love the match. I love Spike in his dungarees and his tie dyes and the wave on the way to the ring, and just the fact that you know in this David and Goliath battle, it's ECW. No, he won't win. He's going to be brutally hurt. And he is. And it's great. And Mike Awesome was so fun. And just because he, like, the mullet is great, the body is great, the work is phenomenal. And just, God, I mean, that was the first time I ever saw the Awesome Bomb. And I'd seen power bombs and I was fairly excited by them. They're great fun. But the Awesome Bomb, where it's just a little higher and with the one hand, and I think he does it off the top rope through the top. Oh, so good. Like, and it was that proper thing of going, this is really excessive wrestling violence taken to another degree, rather than, oh, well, and then New Jack garrotted a puppy, you know, just. And, you know, and then, oh, it was at that point that Tommy Dreamer took the cheese grater to someone's head. I don't like seeing, like, wrestling violence where it's indistinct. Like, I once saw live in Australia during the ill-fated Hulkamania tour, right? I saw a hardcore match where Jerry Sags picked up one of the casino chairs, which we've all sat on in that town, and they're made of brass, right? They've got, like, you know, like a brass underside and a very thick padded cushion, and hit someone in the head with it, but it didn't make a noise because it's all mostly cushion, right?
Yeah.
And all we did was just go, well, that's really heavy. That'll have hurt that guy, but not in a way that we know. Like, he's going to wake up tomorrow a little bit like, oh, Jerry, come on. Right? Whereas when you see, look, little guys who can be thrown around versus big blokes who are going to throw them around, that's the best wrestling of all. So actually, I hate to do this to you. So it's going to be a tie. It's a tie between.
Oh,
sorry, because I've just remembered the one that I. It's Little Spike Dudley versus Mike Awesome, and Kevin Nash versus Rey Mysterio. But the one where Nash just beats the shit out of him.
Does Rey get like a cheap roll up win in that match, or was further down the line?
I think that's the previous one.
It is.
It's the one after he's won, and this is Kevin Nash getting his win back. But it's so cool. Right. Because I was watching it with my friend Tom, and Tom was like, you know, John, I wonder what's going to happen here. And just like, bang! Perfect.
So the vibe for the last match is big lad versus little lad, big lad battering little lad.
Well, because that's when you get to see the moves look good.
Yeah.
That's when it's wrestling now. It's wrestling at its very finest. You know, you tell me that man's a hugely frightening giant. I need to see him destroy something small then. Right. Look, if you're already little, right, you look like you're incredibly far away when the big show's holding you up for a chokeslam and then you go down. It's great. I love stuff like that rather than, okay, we're actually going to be at the mercy of whether this other guy can jump at all. You know, I just want somebody pick him up like a child, throw him down like a pancake, feed him to the dog. Love it.
And it works better with the heels on that side, because I say that because, like, we watched for the classic Raw Review podcast, we're watching 1995, which is like the height of Diesel's reign of error, and it's. It's the whole idea that, like, they try and paint him as this sympathetic champion, yet he towers over everyone on that roster. And it is so difficult to really get behind him because, like, you just batter everybody. Like, there's no sympathy here. And, like, with the match he had against Rey Mysterio, like, the sympathy obviously lies in Rey, as it should. Yep. But got to give Kev his win back. Heaven forbid.
Man.
So you're not going to, this is going to be a tie then, this one. You can't choose one or the other. Yeah.
Let's give it a tie. I feel as though I owe it to the smart mark I was at 17, who went and bought his two ECW DVDs. You know, I owe it to him that he has that, and I owe it to the good times I had with Tom sitting down watching the WCW pay-per-views that we rented along with some French art house films, so people respected us.
Is that equivalent of like buying like a load of what car magazines with pornography in the middle? Just go some French art house, we'll pop that wrestling in there as well, I suppose.
For whatever reason, because I, you know, like this was back when the Attitude Era was running high, but kids would be happy to just go, oh, you know, it's fake. You know, it's fake. So I always felt like, oh, okay, right, they're saying I'm stupid. So I would go down to the art house section of the, you know, of the video store and get Three Colors Blue or get some other sad French thing. And I realize now, looking back on it, they probably just went, who's the weird kid who keeps renting the French films? What's up with him? Oh, I like the wrestling. Oh, well.
Well, we have loved having you chatting about the wrestling with us today.
Thank you.
This has been so cool.
A genuine honor. Thank you for asking me.
No, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you? Plug away, sir. This is your time.
Thank you, my love. You can find me, folks. My name is Mr. John Robertson. You can find me at twitch.tv/Robotron, R-O-B-B-O-T-R-O-N. Twitter is the same thing, R-O-B-B-O-T-R-O-N. Instagram, don't bother. I mean, I've been in my house for 18 months. What do you want? A lot of selfies. You want to see my kitchen? That's actually pretty good. The website is thejohnrobertson.com. That's got all the tour dates on it. Touring constantly around the UK and elsewhere eventually.
Tour dates, anything in Newcastle? I haven't checked.
Oh, I'll be in Newcastle. I will be at the Stand in December.
Oh, guess what we're doing in December?
Thank you, baby. 2 hours of the dark room. And also, if you can't make the tour dates, folks, I do stream 10 times a week on Twitch, twice a day most days. Do pop on by. Oh, yeah.
There's a lovely comfy stream that you do where you are everybody's dad.
Thank you.
And I like that. It's a nice dad stream. So if you need some dad-based comfort.
Come and watch Sunday Lunch with Your Dad, where the character Divorced Aussie Dad cooks you up a feed. Good fun.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.